Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. This Thanksgiving week, we want to thank all of our wonderful listeners out there, as well as our loyal volunteers, interns, reporters, and staff here at East County Magazine and KNSJ. We're thankful to live in East County amid so many beautiful places and such warm and welcoming people, knowing that across the nation and around the world, so many are struggling amid these turbulent times. So this holiday season, please remember to reach out and help some people in need. Today we open our show with some important local stories. The county has granted the right to environmental groups and residents to appeal approval of firearms training at Covert Canyon and Alpine for military, governmental, and law enforcement. County officials have also shut down an illegal military medic training program at a second location, this one a ranch in Ramona, where live pigs were being shot until animal rights activists squealed to county code enforcement officers. In the wake of recent terror attacks around the globe, the growing number of laser strikes on airplanes is drawing scrutiny, including a surprising number that have occurred right here in San Diego. Should some lasers be banned? Learn more on today's show. On our Capitol Report, we'll have details on threats made by ISIS against major U.S. cities, and we'll also have word on the hacktivist group Anonymous efforts to take down ISIS recruitment efforts online. Here in East County, the Grossmont Union High School District is waging a war of its own on several charter schools, seeking to shut them down. But parents and students are fighting back, accusing the district of caring more about money than the well-being of students and not doing enough to help the district's many minority students. Grossmont's board is also drawing controversy for voting this week to incur $500,000 in more debt to continue its legal battle against Alpine parents and taxpayers over whether to build an Alpine high school. Plus, the district is now facing charges of violating the Voting Rights Act, too, so stay tuned for more on these hot issues. On the lighter side of the news, we'll have a story today about a brazen burglar caught in Lakeside, and you won't believe why. Just in time for the holiday shopping season, the East County Chamber of Commerce joined with local community leaders at Parkway Plaza this week to launch a Shop East County campaign, urging shoppers to buy gifts locally this year to help our local economy, and we'll have details. If you're planning to light up a fire in your fireplace as the weather grows chilly, be sure you know where your firewood came from. The county has a warning about the spread of a dangerous new boring beetle that is infesting many species of trees, not just oaks, and it can be spread by transporting firewood. Then on Brewbeat, hear about a major San Diego brewery that's been sold for nearly $1 billion and what that could mean for the local craft brewing industry. On Green Scene, we'll have info from County Parks on some alternatives to Black Friday. If you want to avoid those shopping mall crowds, check out some Green Friday options instead for discovering the upside of outside at parks across our region. A Chaldean church in El Cajon will host a Christmas event December 4th to benefit local people in need, including many Iraqi Chaldean refugees and immigrants who lack basic essentials. Find out how you can help on today's show. Lace up your running shoes before basting your turkey this Thanksgiving morning. It's time for the annual Waddle and Trot 5K Run and Walk through Santee, all to benefit Santee Santas and the Santee Food Bank. Then on Bookshelf, Raina Menashe interviews Santa Claus on today's show, otherwise known as William Swank, about his new book on Christmas traditions across San Diego County, as well as his writings on baseball history. So stay tuned for this fascinating talk. Before you start stringing your holiday lights, we have some safety tips for you. Plus, learn about a teddy bear drive to help kids in the hospital this holiday season. And finally, be sure to catch our weather report, which includes a forecast for a white Thanksgiving across some East County mountain areas, with snow as low as 3,000 feet. Find out what holiday travelers should keep in mind and where you can go this holiday weekend to enjoy some frolicking in the snow. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. Last week, we reported on environmental groups and Alpine residents seeking permission to file appeals of the county's interim approval of Covert Canyon, which wants to conduct firearms training for military, government, and law enforcement in rural Alpine. Now the County Planning Commission has granted approval for those appeals and set a December 11th hearing date where the public as well as those filing appeals will be allowed to speak. In addition to appeals filed by neighbors and another group of 15 Alpine residents, the Cleveland National Forest Foundation has joined with Save Our Forests and Ranchlands and the Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation in seeking to appeal the project, which is surrounded by protected federal forest lands. The county is requiring a $1,600 fee for each appeal filed, drawing sharp objections since no public hearing has been held on the controversial project since 2010. Covert Canyon has a history of enforcement issues and has previously been fined and even shut down for violating zoning ordinances. Supporters have contended that the project is needed to fill a need for law enforcement training locally. Opponents have raised numerous objections, including fire safety, noise, and environmental impacts in rural Alpine, suggesting that training should be done instead at a military base such as Camp Pendleton. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. In response to a complaint filed by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, which alleged live shooting of pigs for military training at Creek Hollow Ranch in Ramona, the county has sent a cease and desist order to Colleen Berman, president of Creek Hollow Ranch. Berman, in turn, has sent a letter to CIMAC Training Solutions canceling its contract. PETA's letter indicated that a whistleblower informed the animal rights group that CIMAC was shooting and injuring live pigs during paramilitary training drills monthly at the site, which has an agricultural zoning classification that does not permit such activities without a major use permit. Similar activities were shut down by the county at Covert Canyon and Alpine. The county recently did issue a temporary order allowing Covert Canyon to conduct firearms training that includes military personnel, but without live fire during medic training. In the case of Covert Canyon, the county allowed anesthetized pigs to be used by medics for training, a more humane approach, but prohibited shooting of the pigs. Dummies are also being utilized for medic training at that site. PETA's letter to the county regarding Creek Hollow Ranch in Ramona, sent November 12th, states CIMAC's apparently illegal land use for medical training is especially troubling because there is no need to mutilate and kill pigs for this purpose. Military studies show that personnel who learn how to perform emergency medical procedures on human simulators instead of by maiming animals are as proficient as, or more so, than those trained using animals. County Code Enforcement Officer Lorena Shingery responded promptly on November 16th with a letter to the Creek Hollow Ranch owner advising that while the county had not inspected the property, if this type of training is occurring, this correspondence serves as a cease and desist order and all training must immediately stop pending issuance of a major use permit. The letter noted that penalties for violating the zoning ordinance can include citations up to $10,000 and civil penalties up to $50,000 per violation, as well as a civil injunction or even criminal prosecution. The property owner's letter to CIMAC on November 17th canceling the contract makes no mention of seeking a major use permit, and now Creek Hollow Ranch is listed for sale for just under $5 million on the website Equestrian Real Estate. The sale listing describes the property as an equestrian complex on 350 acres of pristine valley and rolling hills that provide a tranquil backdrop of natural surroundings for spending time with your horse, making no mention of live fire pig shootings or military-type activities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
In the wake of recent terror attacks in Paris and threats by the Islamic State to target coalition force leaders, security is being beefed up across the United States. One area of concern is the dramatic increase in laser beams striking commercial airliners, helicopters, private jets, and other air traffic. On November 11th, just 2 days before the Paris massacres, 20 aircraft were hit by laser beams during flights in the United States, Reuters reported. Such strikes are potentially lethal, since laser beams could blind pilots or temporarily distract them during takeoffs or landings. A laser beam, though only a pinpoint of light when transmitted, fans out to become a bright bubble of pulsating light when it reaches the cockpit window. According to the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, nationwide this year through October 2nd, there have been nearly 5,000 incidents of laser striking planes. That includes 106 incidents right here in San Diego through October 2nd. Channel 10 News reports, nearly double the 58 incidents here in all of 2014 and over triple the 29 cases in 2010 of lasers striking planes in San Diego. The numbers are up nationally, too, according to the Associated Press. By year's end, we're on pace to have 6,850 laser incidents targeting air traffic nationwide, 176% increase over the prior year. Recent laser strikes in San Diego include a United Airlines plane on November 9th, an American Airlines jet struck in late October, and a SkyWest plane hit on September 30th, according to several local TV stations. Pointing a laser at an aircraft is a federal crime since 2012, punishable by up to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine, as well as civil penalties up to $11,000 for each violation. So parents, please caution your kids not to aim laser pointers at the sky if they own these devices. Some places have banned laser pointers to protect pilots and passengers. The Australian state of New South Wales outlawed ownership of the devices after lasers hit planes landing in Sydney. New Zealand banned lasers over 1 megawatt. New Jersey's legislature passed a bill to ban laser ownership, but the governor vetoed it. Several U.S. cities have banned or sharply restricted laser devices, including Ocean City, Maryland, Ocean City, New Jersey, and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. The website Laser Pointer Safety points these out. In March, U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer called on the Food and Drug Administration to ban green lasers, which are brighter, travel further, and can do more damage to the eyes than other laser colors. Powerful green lasers have only been on the market for a few years and are used largely in outdoor applications. Senator Schumer said, "These green lasers are the weapons of choice when it comes to taking aim at airplanes for people who are up to no good." The senator added that we have to do all we can to ground these lasers for the safety of the pilots and the passengers who depend on them, New York Daily Times reported. Though catching suspects in such cases can be challenging, some have been apprehended. New York police arrested a suspect who allegedly aimed a laser at a news helicopter. A reporter on board was able to zoom a camera lens in on the suspect to aid the police. In San Diego, a sheriff's helicopter tracked down and arrested a suspect aiming a laser at the chopper. The FBI is offering a $10,000 reward for information leading to arrest of suspects pointing lasers. Laser pointing devices have a range of applications, including business and education, gaming, and more, but eye damage has occurred when laser pointers are used inappropriately, such as in crowds or at a sporting event. The website Laser Pointer Safety offers tips for safe use of laser devices, such as not pointing at stars, which could actually be distant aircraft. For more information, you can visit LaserPointerSafety.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. In a video released online this week, a group purporting to be the Islamic State or ISIS has issued a threat to attack Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. The group called the slaughter in last week's Paris attacks just the beginning. Reuters reports that a spokesman in the ISIS video states, "We say to the states that take part in the Crusader campaign that, by God, you will have a day, God willing, like France's," adding, "As we struck France in the center of its abode in Paris, then we swear that we will strike America at its center in Washington." A second video threatens attacks on New York City's Times Square. CIA Director John Brennan has said the attacks in Paris should serve as a wake-up call for Americans, ABC News reports, and that there could be other plots in the making. Authenticity of the video has not been officially verified, and the FBI has not confirmed what it calls a credible threat. However, security has been beefed up at the U.S. Capitol, parks, and monuments in Washington, as well as at other key locations, such as Times Square in New York, where a heavy presence of police, some in body armor, was clearly visible this week. To date, the U.S. has conducted 2,500 bombing raids against ISIS in Syria and Iraq, also arresting several ISIS terror suspects here in the United States, The Hill and ABC News have reported.
after ISIS released a video vowing that it would attack several other major cities worldwide, including Washington, D.C., the hacker group Anonymous released its own video stating that its members would unleash, quote, waves of attacks on the terrorist group, CBS News reports. ISIS is also known as ISIL, the Islamic State, or by the Arabic acronym Daesh. A YouTube video portraying a masked man speaking French warned ISIS that the hacker group has declared war on ISIS and to prepare themselves. After the Paris terror attacks, Anonymous posted its iconic image on Twitter with the colors of the French flag superimposed. ISIS's response to the video was to call Anonymous, quote, idiots, and to help its supporters defend against the group's cyber attacks. On Sunday, the hacker group claimed to have seized over 3,800 Twitter accounts run by people in support of ISIS. On Monday, Anonymous said it has hacked and seized over 5,500 ISIS Twitter accounts. Anonymous has been fighting ISIS for some time. Earlier this year, the group had almost 150 websites that were suspected of links to ISIS, according to a report by Foreign Policy. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Albert.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report on issues facing the Grossmont Union High School District. Wearing green shirts reading Defend School Choice, more than 100 parents, students, and teachers turned out at last week's board meeting to protest lawsuits filed by the district seeking to shut down multiple charter schools. Speaker after speaker gave emotional testimony pleading with the board to save their schools. The district claims the schools are operating illegally without authorization of the district, arguing in its lawsuit that such schools are not accountable to the students and families they serve or the taxpayers on whose dime they operate. But the schools say that they are operating as resource centers, not charters, and thus are legal. Supporters of the charter schools claim the district is interested not in the well-being of students being served, but in money. Specifically, bringing state average daily attendance payments back into the district's coffers. Attendance in the district has declined sharply, with much of that due to students leaving district schools to attend Diego Valley Public Charter in El Cajon and Julian Charter Schools Alpine Academy in Alpine, two of the schools the district wants to shut down. Others include the San Diego Academy Charter Homestead in La Mesa and Mosaica Online Academy in El Cajon. Diego Valley Charter serves at-risk students, including many Iraqi Chaldean immigrants and other minorities, as well as dropouts, pregnant students, and students who have aged out of the public high school system. The lawsuit is set to be heard June 10th of next year in San Diego Superior Court. Catherine Dennett, a parent with a son at Julian Charter in Alpine, said the school is less than a mile from her home. Alpine has no public high school despite two bond measures passed to fund building one, a fact that the district is fighting in yet another lawsuit. Dennett said her son has special needs, and yet he's become a superstar at the charter school, earning a 4.0 grade point average. Her son, Robert, also testified. He said the school has given him a strong foundation to be a lifelong learner, and he called the board's actions heartbreaking. 16-year-old Jacqueline Ramirez brought her young daughter to the podium with her. She became pregnant while she was a freshman at Granite Hills High School, where she said she was criticized by teachers and forced by a PE teacher to run while she was pregnant and was also the subject of rumors. She fell behind on credits and eventually transferred to Diego Valley, which she says is perfect for her. Now she has a flexible schedule to care for her daughter and can even bring her child to school if she can't find a babysitter. Teachers at Diego are supportive, not judgmental, she said, noting that the school provides an option for students 18 or older to still get their high school diploma. Craig Beswick, the principal at Diego Valley, urged the board to stop wasting public education resources on yet another lawsuit. He noted that 60% of Diego Valley students are over 18 and have aged out of the Grossmont system, so they couldn't go to the Grossmont schools anyway. We turn dropouts into high school grads, which as educators is all of our responsibility, he told the board. At Diego Valley, 86% of students graduate and 40% go on to college. Of the 600 students, over 120 are Chaldeans from Iraq, and a quarter of the students are parents. Almost 25% of them are English language learners. Chloe Peel, who is 16 years old, said she has a disability that prevents her from walking far or taking a bus if she has to get into a wheelchair. She attends the Alpine Academy, where she says everyone is cooperative and makes me feel like I belong. Bob Stewart, CEO of the nonprofit Access that helps meet the needs of vulnerable and underserved populations locally, said Grossmont's 25% district-wide dropout rate is worse than the state average. He praised Diego Valley for providing a safe and supportive environment where students can get one-on-one attention. Too often, he said, dropouts wind up in jail, on welfare, or unemployed. But at Diego Valley, over 150 at-risk youths who were dropouts or in trouble with the law have actually graduated and enrolled in internships. Grossmont isn't the only district seeking to shut down charters that draw ADA money out of the district's coffers. Countywide, almost a dozen charter schools are targets of lawsuits countywide by various school districts, with about 5,000 students at risk of having their schools close if those suits succeed. And many of those students, like here, have disabilities or are disadvantaged or at risk of dropping out. The item wasn't actually on the agenda, and therefore the board could not address public comments. But Board President Robert Shield did say, "You have been heard, and I will have certain questions to ask the superintendent." Board member Priscilla Schreiber told East County Magazine that she was not even informed of the district's lawsuit targeting charter schools until the meeting. She minced no words, calling the board majority bullies. She said the district is realizing a day late and a dollar short that it hasn't done enough to meet the needs of Chaldean immigrants and other students with special needs. She faults the board majority for seeking to evade the enrollment trigger in bond measures that an appeals court has held compel it to build an Alpine high school. The district has recently expanded a continuation school instead, where enrollment doesn't count toward that trigger. Rubbing salt in the wound for Alpine families, the board also voted 3-2 to incur over $500,000 more debt to continue the legal battle over an Alpine high school. Schreiber and Jim Stieringer opposed that. Alpine taxpayers in the Alpine Union School District have sued the Grossmont District, and a judge ordered Grossmont to set aside money to build the high school for Alpine, but the district has refused to settle. Stieringer said the lawsuit is crying out for a settlement. Schreiber asked several pointed questions, faulting the superintendent and board majority for incurring more debt and not having the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee weigh in. But Chairman Shield repeatedly interrupted Schreiber, insisting her 2 minutes were up and calling her tone unprofessional. Nick Marinovich, a former member of the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, gave testimony criticizing the Oversight Committee for failing to provide oversight of bond funds used for the lawsuit. He added, "It's a dirty secret that campaign money influences board decisions," and he said he's been threatened by one of the board's consultants. As if there weren't enough fireworks for the district in one day, Attorney John Lemo, representing Diego Valley Charter, also served the Grossmont District with notice that it's in violation of the California Voting Rights Act, we have learned. The letter asked the Grossmont District to immediately initiate a change in how its district voting lines are drawn up to assure adequate representation of minorities such as the community's large Chaldean population. The city of El Cajon recently voted to take action to move toward district elections due to its large Chaldean population. The Grossmont District's failure to provide adequate programs to help struggling students succeed while trying to shut down Diego Valley Charter, a school serving mainly Chaldeans and other minorities, may feed into those arguments of critics who contend that the district is discriminating against its minority students.
This is DeVario Bell with a Crime Beat Report. On Sunday morning, employees at the Lakeside River Park Conservancy found that their office had been broken into. A laptop had been stolen, the alarm dismantled, and fruit from the fridge was scattered across tables. A security camera revealed an image of the intruder eating and tampering with the alarm system, the Sheriff's Department reports. It sent Deputy Darrell Patman out to the scene to investigate. The next morning at 7:30 a.m., employees again arrived at work and discovered the same man in the video standing in the kitchen, drinking tea, after sleeping in the office and breaking some items, the River Park's Facebook page indicates. Deputy Patman, along with Deputy Jose Gonzalez, responded to a call from an employee and arrested the Brazen Bandit suspect, 27-year-old Joshua Parnell. The Lakeside River Park Conservancy has posted a message on its website asking help to recoup its loss. Even dumb criminals can cause significant damage, as did this one, the message states. As a small nonprofit, this is a significant loss to us, even with insurance coverage. To help replace the stolen and damaged items, the group has set up a break-in restoration fund on its website at www.lakesideriverpark.org.
Santa Claus joined with East County Chamber of Commerce leaders, El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, and Parker Plaza officials Thursday for a ribbon-cutting ceremony to launch a new Shop East County program. The average person spends about $805 each holiday shopping season on gifts, decorations, and food, money that, when spent locally, creates sales tax revenues that can be used to fund police, firefighting, and other services to benefit people in East County. Mayor Wells praised the new program, adding that his wife has already finished her holiday shopping, buying all of her gifts from local merchants. On November 28th, downtown El Cajon will celebrate Holiday Lights on Main, including a large tree lighting ceremony at 6 p.m., plus a skating rink, Santa's Village, live music, and more to draw visitors into the downtown area and help local merchants there. Chamber President Eric Lund noted that 17% of all retail income for stores for the year comes in during the holiday season, so shopping locally helps support and sustain local businesses. The Chamber is giving away free Shop East County buttons for store employees and signs for shops to display in store windows. Jill Kobe, the general manager at Parkway Plaza, says the mall now has 170 stores, and that includes a healthy mix of national and local retailers under the mall's new ownership by Starwood Retail Partners. To help local businesses grow, the mall's specialty lease program allows local retailers to get a short-term lease, and that takes some of the risk out of starting a new retail venture. Kobe calls this an economic gardening program for small businesses. The mall is doing its part to entice those holiday shoppers with all new decorations, a Santa's Village, and opening this week, a brand new children's play area inspired by the whimsical works of Dr. Seuss. The mall also plans a series of holiday concerts. The day after Thanksgiving, known as Black Friday, actually brings in a lot of green to the local retail scene as shoppers take advantage of bargains while boosting sales for local businesses. According to the website BestBlackFriday.com, about 30% of shoppers surveyed said that this year they plan to spend $250 to $500, and 32% of them plan to spend over $500. Although last year's holiday season spending was flat, experts are predicting increased spending this year. So Chamber President Eric Lund concludes, "We thought it was important to launch this program to support our local businesses and educate consumers that they can meet virtually every holiday shopping need locally. Specifically, at local businesses east of I-15, he concludes, it's all right here. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
When it comes to wood borers, this one always gets the most press. The gold-spotted oak borer is causing massive die-offs in our local woodlands, infesting and killing decades-old stands of oak trees.
What we have here is a bunch of different types of wood that have been attacked by different boring beetles.
But while the gold-spotted borer, or GSOB for short, is an imported aggressive pest, county entomologist Tracy Ellis reminds us that it's not the only species out there.
These types of borers attack trees that are already dead and dying from other conditions, and it's part of the normal decay process.
So if you had wood dotted with these tiny holes, it used to hold true that oak was the only firewood you needed to be concerned about when it came to spreading a bad borer. But with firewood season upon us, there's another borer with a much wider diet that could be lurking in that freshly cut pile of wood. It's called a Polyphagus shothole borer, and it's hungry.
One of the reasons that the new one, the Polyphagus shothole borer, is confusing to people is because it looks so much like other shot hole borers in a whole bunch of different types of trees, and it affects a whole bunch of different types of trees, about 10 different families of trees.
Oak trees, coral trees, red maples, plums, even avocados. This map shows the Southland's avocado groves in green. The blue and red triangles mark confirmed infestations of the borer. The concern for avocado farmers is that a rogue load of firewood could spread the pest further across the state.
The prepackaged wood that's wrapped and bundled and labeled at your grocery store or your drugstore is fine. You can tell that wood has been dried and cured, and there's no living larvae in that wood.
Dry, seasoned wood, or wood that has been chipped into mulch, those are the only ways to be sure an infested tree has been rid of the pest. So if you have a tree on your property that has the telltale markings of a borer, it would be wise to visit one of two websites, gsob.org or pshb.org.
They can make reports on what symptoms they're having and make contact with an expert who can help them diagnose what kind of pests they have. And if it's a pest that's of concern, where they would need to dispose of it carefully.
Whether it's your own wood or firewood purchased in bulk from a supplier, the concern about the threat to California's farms and forests is great enough to warrant its own website. To learn more about the Buy It Where You Burn It campaign, visit firewood.ca.gov. In the County News Center, I'm Dominic Fulgoni.
One of San Diego's most beloved and famous brewers has been sold. Perhaps Dr. Evil from Austin Powers could say it best, but the price tag was a staggering $1 billion. Ballast Point Brewing and Spirits, famous for its Sculpin India Pale Ale, has been sold to Constellation Brands, which primarily distributes import beers from Mexico, such as Corona, Modelo Especial, and Pacifico. The move comes as a shock to the San Diego craft beer industry, with some commenters accusing the brewery of selling out. Many craft beer enthusiasts were looking forward to an upcoming initial public offering on the market in which investors could purchase stock in Ballast Point. That IPO, however, will no longer be happening according to the Union Tribune. Ballast Point will likely reach a new, much broader audience around the nation and perhaps the world with such a large corporation taking over. An acquisition of this magnitude is certainly unprecedented in the craft beer industry. Local brewers may indeed have a bright future ahead with such a major focus spotlighting the local beer industry. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
If you're looking to avoid crowded shopping malls on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, you may want to consider Green Friday instead. County Parks and Recreation has declared Friday, November 27th, Green Friday, to prompt families to spend more quality time together by discovering the upside of outside. County Parks has 124 parks and preserves with locations ranging from beaches to valleys, mountains to deserts. Altogether, you'll find over 350 miles of trails, scenic vistas, numerous playgrounds, picnic areas, historic sites, lakes, creeks, ponds, and more. So if you're a hiker, bicyclist, equestrian, walker, sightseer, birdwatcher, picnicker, or maybe all of those things, you could find a park that will fit the bill and maybe even a last-minute camping site. County Parks Director Brian Albright says, "Sometimes we get so involved in our busy lives that we forget to step outside and appreciate all that nature has to offer. Green Friday is about enjoying the outdoors and creating memories with the family and friends you love most." If you need some more ideas for Green Friday, or you're still stuffed and want to work off some of those Thanksgiving feast calories, you can find out how to get fit for free at County Parks, or enter the Paint Your Photo Stream Green contest for a chance to win prizes. To check out these and more ideas, just Google the San Diego County Parks and Recreation Department website and then click on the Green Friday link at the top of the page. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
St. Michael's Chaldean Catholic Church will host its first annual Gift of Giving Christmas Gala on Friday, December 4th at 8 p.m. The 21 years or older wine and cheese gala will feature a silent auction, raffle items, a selection of wines from local wineries, craft beers, and donated foods. All proceeds from the event will go towards assisting members of our community, said Jennifer Merrim. The majority of it being the Chaldean Catholic and Assyrian refugees who lack basic necessities such as mattresses. We hope that this event will help better support the youth refugee programs and provide them with better opportunities to grow and learn upon first arriving in this country. The event will be held in the church hall at St. Michael's Chaldean Catholic Church on East Washington Avenue in El Cajon. For more information or tickets, visit chaldeanevents@gmail.com. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
The Santee Santas invite you to join their fourth annual Waddle and Trot 5K and Fun Run happening at 8 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day, November 26th. Runners and walkers of all levels are welcome this Thursday. The fast and flat 5K race starts and finishes at the Pathways Center in Santee, then loops around through scenic Santee Lakes. The quarter-mile fun run takes place at the Pathways Center campus. All proceeds benefit Santee Santas and the Santee Food Bank. The first 1,000 5K registrants will receive a T-shirt and a commemorative race medallion. All Kids Fun Run participants receive a medal. For more information or to register, you can visit pathways.cc/waddleandtrot or just check out the calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing author Bill Swank to discuss the release of his new book, Christmas in San Diego. My guest has a diverse resume. He's not only a baseball historian with 9 baseball books under his belt, but since 2002 he's been our much-loved Santa at Balboa Park's festive December nights. Baseball and Santa, often called the Baseball Santa. Welcome, Bill. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun to be here.
Let's start with your new book, Christmas in San Diego. It takes the reader on a tour of the holiday in our region. So first, tell me how a baseball aficionado became so involved in Christmas in San Diego.
Well, the book came about because I've written a couple of books for Arcadia on baseball. And my editor was out here a couple of years ago, and he said, why don't you do a book on Christmas? And at the time, all I had really were pictures of myself. My only knowledge of Christmas was what I already knew. I began researching the history of Christmas in San Diego. I wanted to see how Christmas was celebrated in the various communities of San Diego. What are the traditions of Christmas in San Diego? I found a lot of pictures of trees, Christmas trees. Now, I thought that was fun, so that's a chapter. Mm-hmm. And then the final chapter is on Santa Clauses, because I really didn't know any other Santa Clauses. And the Santa Clauses I was looking for, I purposely was not looking for mall Santas.
Right.
I'm looking for volunteer Santas.
Uh-huh.
And they're out there. They tell wonderful stories, and it's about the spirit that's in these people. And they can be men, they can be women. We're in the East County. There's a group in Santee called the Santee Santas, which I think is a great name. Started back in 1953 with the superintendent of schools and some teachers to make Christmas good for some kids that didn't have any money.
Oh.
Now there are over 200 members.
Really?
Santee Santas. I love the name. The point I try to make in the book is that they're all Santas and they want to give to others. And the Christmas spirit is about giving and being good to one another.
So you got involved with December Nights and your editor sort of volunteered you to write this book. And then you started doing all the research. Is that right?
Well, it isn't that he volunteered. He asked me if I would do
you.
It. And I thought, yeah, that would be great because, the two have become intertwined in my life. I got the name Baseball Santa because I played for the House of David. It's a religious colony out of Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And they had beards and long hair. And I'm the only Santa that's ever played for them. They used to play against the Negro Leagues, and when I went back to the Negro Leagues draft 2008, when I hand out my card, people say, oh, you're Santa. And these former Negro League players, they all said, we thought you were probably with House of David.
Hmm. Well, you look like the most authentic Santa I've
ever
seen,
you.
Like the original picture book. It's
well,
wonderful.
I didn't know I was going to look like this. I was a skinny little kid.
Uh-huh.
And when you look like this, you get approached by you can make good money being Santa Claus. So I was asked to be a Santa by a woman that takes photographs at Sears. What happened is my wife and I were at Hometown Buffet. I'm loading up my plate, and I feel something on my leg. And I look down, and it's a little tiny Mexican girl. And she's got both arms wrapped around my
Aww.
Leg. And when I looked down, she looked up. She said, I love you, Santa.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
And I pat her on the head, and I said, I love you too, honey. And my heart just melted.
Uh-huh.
And a woman standing there says, that happened to you very often? I said, well, the older I get, the more it happens. Well, within that year, my wife and I were at a party at a neighbor's house, and two women approached and said, we want you to be our Santa. I said, I don't want to be Santa. But when they said it was for the Christmas Center in Balboa Park at the Organ Pavilion with the little dioramas mm-hmm. that tell the Christmas story, mm-hmm. They said they needed a Santa, and I took my kids there when they were little. And I thought, well, this is a way I can give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And I've been there Santa since 2002. This will be my 14th year. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's wonderful. I'm very proud to be San Diego Santa.
And your writing of this book is a wonderful story, too, because it's Santa finding out more about the Golden Rule, as you say, here in San Diego. Give us another example, if you would, about the goodness that happens at this time in San Diego.
There's a group in National City of mm-hmm. bikers
yeah.
that give out free bicycles to poor kids in National City. They give out 200 a year. I met the man. He goes by the name of Snowball. He's got a beard and he's got a chopper. He's with a motor club, the Booze Fighters, as a matter of fact, is the name of their club. And he met a guy drinking beer. And when he found out this man, his name was King, that he was fixing up old bikes and painting them for poor kids down National City, he thought, well, I like to work on mechanical things and I like drink beer. So this goes back maybe 30 years, and he got these other bikers involved. So on Christmas, they have a parade down National City, and they've got Santa in a sidecar, and they give out these free bikes. Now, those guys are Santa Claus. Now, you may look at them and say, they're bikers, but they're Santa. And that's what I mean by there's so right. many unusual Santas in San Diego.
So you don't need to look the part, but
right.
all these people under the radar, they're doing these amazingly generous things.
Parents are Santa.
Right.
And we... The goodness that we have in us is Santa Claus, I say. Mm-hmm. I have no training as Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. I remember taking my kids to the mall and, you know, they wore the fake beards and they had the 1,000-yard stare and they didn't interact with the kids. I try to be the Santa I wish my kids could have visited. And I talk to the kids and I smile for all the pictures and I'm friendly with people. And yes, I am a little loud, but they like that. I was Santa for hospice until San Diego Hospice until they went bankrupt.
What was that like?
It was very difficult. The first day that I went out, I was very serious, and I was a sober, somber Santa, and it wasn't much fun, and I wasn't doing much in the homes. And the more I loosened up and the louder and the jollier I got, the better it was. They told me, they said, you're going to bring joy in these families. And I thought, how can you? But the first year, a woman told me, this is the best Christmas we ever had, which shocked me.
That's amazing.
And a story I like to tell is about a little boy. Now, this little boy is in hospice. And you know what that means.
Uh-huh.
He came out to greet me. He was mobile. He said, Santa, I love you. Oh. I love you, too. We go inside. He says, when I grow up, I want to be Santa Claus. This is a kid in hospice. He's 7 years old. He wants to be Santa when he grows up. So I said, why wait? I took off my hat, I took off
perfect.
My jacket, and I put it on him. That's the picture that uh-huh. I just showed you. Uh-huh. This little boy with wearing my jacket and then my belt's wrapped around a couple times, he's got this big smile. He wants to be Santa when he grows up. And I said, why do you want to be Santa? And he says, I want to do nice things for other people. That kid was a Santa.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking
yes, he
about.
Was.
Here's a little boy with cancer, dying of cancer, and he's thinking about being good to other people. And that's what I hope the whole message of my book is, touching on that part mm-hmm. of San Diego. Appreciate all the wonderful people that we have in all the right. communities, all the volunteers that make Christmas a wonderful celebration for everybody else.
Right, because we have so much bad news in the news. It's nice to remember the good things that are there, even if
there's
we
a lot of good
them.
In the world. There's a mm-hmm. lot of good in the world. People are getting upset about Christmas. Christmas is the celebration of the birth of Jesus. Santa Claus is not, you know, it's a secular figure. I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm not pushing any religious agenda.
Mm-hmm.
The golden rule, be good to others. That's my agenda.
And that's universal.
It is. It is.
Can you give us a Santa laugh? A ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
How about ho, 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 Merry Christmas?
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas, kids.
I love it. Okay. Let's go back to your book and its honoring of diversity. You mentioned some unique decorations. Can you give us an idea, a glimpse at some of the decorations you've seen that are more unusual or more striking?
Well, diversity, you know, it's taken on a different term. You know, now they think of it, you know, it's kind of a racial and a gender term.
Mm-hmm.
And the diversity that I was addressing is San Diego County is very diverse just by its geography, by its size. So the book has Ocotillo Wells celebrating Christmas out in the desert, an unusual decoration. Out in Hacumba, they have a tumbleweed decorating contest.
And
last year, a seventh grade kid, I think he won $100 for a tumbleweed Santa and reindeer out in his front yard. Decorations that people have put up out in Canyon City, I think it is. It's out near Campo. There's nothing in Canyon City. And I went past, and there's a manger scene. It's very simple. I mean, the rocks that were saying Canyon City, they've fallen off. But people are celebrating Christmas in so many ways. I write for the Claremont Times. There are neighborhoods throughout San Diego County that decorate for Christmas. And they have names, like there's Candy Cane Lane down in Chula Vista, and there's Christmas cards at Penasquito's. Claremont always has this wonderful neighborhood light display, but it doesn't have a name. It's just called Jamar and Lana. Those are the drives. I thought, this place needs a name. I found out that the man who started this, and this goes back into the 1970s, and he has just begun treatment for cancer, so this is kind of a tough time in his life. His name is Don Park. And so my column that'll be coming out in December, I'm proposing that the Claremont light display be called Claremont Christmas Park.
Perfect.
And so people won't know, they won't understand the park part, but everybody in the neighborhood will. So, but I mean, here's this guy. He told me how as a young father, his little boy, they went walking in the neighborhood, handing out flyers. Let's decorate for Christmas. And now it's one of the great Christmas decorations, a community that decorates. And if you live there, I've talked to the neighbors. They say, you got to get in by 4 o'clock because you ain't getting out.
Oh, I'd love to see it. Let's go back to December nights because I know that that's a very beloved festival here in town. First of all, what's it like being in front of all those people? And then what does the experience bring to your holiday, your personal holiday?
Well, it used to be called Christmas on the Prado. It got changed in 2002 to December Nights in the Park. They used to get 50, 60,000 people, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now they estimate that they get 300 to 350,000 people. And so it's become very commercial.
Oh.
Now, the display that is in the park, the original purpose was for it to be non-commercial. Now it's gone the other direction.
What do you mean by it's gotten commercial?
They're selling food. They're selling so many things.
Okay.
And I'm Santa Claus. I have no idea what's going on because when you wear a red suit and you get out of your sleigh, mine being a car, kids see you and they start following you. And then I walk behind the Oregon Pavilion, get to my chair. There's a long line waiting for me and I see everybody in the line and then they follow me back to my car. So I really don't know what happens.
Right. So the commercial part doesn't touch
you. Yeah. It's and there's so many families and kids that come back every year and it's just so good to see them. And I tell people that when you're Santa, you operate on a stage. It's 2 feet square at the most. Kids are right in your face.
Sure.
And when they're looking at you and you're Santa and I have a real beard. In 2002, there weren't that many real beards. I remember kids touching my beard. I thought I'd get my beard pulled. I've never had a kid pull my beard.
No one ever tried to yank it off.
The only one that tried it, the only one that pulled my beard, I was on Scott and BR and their TV show. And Scott, he says he's Jewish. He says, I always wanted to pull Santa's beard. He pulled my beard. And I didn't like it.
No.
And I thought it was, he thinks he's a wise guy. But it was inappropriate, but that's his style. I've never had a kid pull my beard.
Wow. Okay, let's go a little bit to your historian hat instead of your Santa hat. So what is the thing that you love to research the most in history? I guess about the city of San Diego, what is the most interesting historical fact that you've ever learned? Whether it be about baseball or Santa, any topic.
My first book was about the Lanefield Padres.
Okay.
And I wanted to learn about baseball before professional baseball came to town. So I spent a long time researching old newspaper articles. I went to the library. I was at the Historical Society. And there were a lot of stories that were told, and most of them were wrong. because it would be history that gets repeated, and a story gets written, say, in 1910, and it gets rewritten in 1930, and they change it a little bit, and everything keeps changing. So I went back and found the history of baseball in San Diego. And it was with Arcadia that they wanted me to do a book when Petco Park opened. And you can just write so much about baseball, and I wanted to do more. So the first book sold, so they let me do the early history of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was finding all the wonderful stories that happened before 1936 when the Padres came to town. As my wife knows, I just enjoy doing research and going to the library and going through the microfilm. And when you discover something new, which is really very old, it's just a lot of fun. It's very exciting.
And it sounds like no matter what you do, you're looking for those little stories.
Yes.
Untold
yes.
Stories.
It's like you're on a trip. I was at the library once and the librarian said that she was going to a hockey game that night. And I said, is it hockey season? She said, I know your problem. You're lost in your research. I was back in the 1890s. You know, that happens when you get into research.
One last question. What are you writing next? Is it going to be more baseball, more Santa, more history? Give us a glimpse.
Well, let's ask my wife, what am I writing next? She has a lot of ideas of things I'd like to do. Getting published is not easy. And once you're published, publishers will contact you to want you to write stuff. I mean, like happened with this book. I originally thought I was going to write about my experiences as a probation officer.
And oh, you were a probation officer. This
yes.
comes up at the end of the interview. Okay.
Yes. And people that worked for me or that I was their probation officer, they said, I can't believe you're Santa Claus. I was never described as a jolly guy. People now that know me, that they say, yeah, you're such a jolly guy. Well, I wasn't always a jolly guy.
So as a probation officer, you saw, let's say, a little bit of the darker side, and now you're focusing on the brighter side, it seems.
That's very true. I'm an old guy now, and I'm enjoying life, and I'm very happy being Santa Claus, and I enjoy baseball. I don't like to get involved in political conversations, mm-hmm. and I say to people, let's talk baseball.
Right.
Or with you, let's talk Christmas.
And then you'll see what you work on next, whatever comes your way.
Well, I might do my book on probation. There was, in fact, it's East County Story. It was the greatest case I ever had, a man named Stuart Siegel. And he was involved with Barona Bingo back in the 80s. And he was just a famous con man. I mean, the guy did not spend one day of custody, and he had a rap sheet. I think it was 37 different states. He was an informant. And so he was always sliding by. I was a supervisor, so I was able to devote more time than a normal, a probation officer has a large caseload. And I made it my goal to get this guy, and I finally got him, and the FBI was hiding him out in the LAPD because he was a witness in the biggest homicide case before OJ in LA. He was a witness in that case. It was an LA cop that killed some people. It was called the Yom Kippur murders. Wow. Before that, it was called the Ninja murders.
Uh-huh.
I tracked this guy down, finally found him, and he went to 5 years in prison. That's how I used to get my fun. Yeah, I was not Santa that
right.
night.
Wow. Well, you've had a fascinating story to tell us today. That's all we have time for. But thank you so much for joining us and telling us your stories.
Well, it's nice to be here. And Merry Christmas to everybody out there listening to us.
To check out Bill Swank's blog, please visit baseballsantaswank.wordpress.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
East County Magazine has compiled some important holiday safety tips for you with help from Fire Chief Sam D. Giovanna, our Chief's Corner columnist. 'Tis the season for hanging holiday decorations. One of the most common causes of holiday time house fires results from those bulbs being too close to gutters filled with dried out leaves. Make sure that strings of lights you're using outside have built-in fuses on the lines. Check the plug and be sure you're using lights designated for outdoor use only. Use Christmas lights and electric equipment that have been tested and verified by a reliable testing laboratory. If you have a string of lights with a blown bulb, be sure to replace it with a bulb of the same wattage. Avoid using nails, tacks, or metal staples to secure your outdoor Christmas lights. Instead, use insulated hooks. Be sure your lights are strung tightly to avoid damage from the wind. Use only outdoor-rated extension cords. Connect no more than 3 strings of lights to a single extension cord, and all plugs should be plugged into a GFCI-protected outlet when used outdoors. Now, if you're using a ladder to put your holiday decorations up, be careful. Don't place the ladder in a muddy location. Watch for overhead wires. When climbing the ladder, use caution and have someone secure the ladder for you. Also, be sure to replace any cords that are worn or frayed, or decorations that are broken or rusted. Never put candles near your Christmas tree or other holiday decorations. Run tree lights only when you are home, and don't turn on the tree lights if your tree has become too dry at the end of the season. It's also a good idea to place your tree and other holiday decorations a safe distance away from the fireplace. Always put safety first to assure a happy holiday season. You can get more safety tips by visiting the Chief's Corner column at our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
The San Diego Regional Law Enforcement Teddy Bear Drive is putting out an all-points bulletin on new stuffed teddy bears with tags still attached. They are asking the public to turn them in at any law enforcement station or at Chick-fil-A restaurants in San Diego County. The teddy bears will be donated and delivered on December 8th to Rady Children's Hospital to comfort sick and scared children. The Teddy Bear Drive was started by Coronado Police Officer Brian Hardy back in 1990, who says, "This is for all the kids." That first year, Hardy happened upon an empty toy donation bin at Rady Children's Hospital, so he loaded up his patrol car on his own time and brought in a dozen bears to donate in the name of the Coronado Police Department. Since that time, the drive has grown to include every law enforcement agency in the San Diego region joining in. About 60,000 stuffed animals are now collected each year. Cash donations also allow Teddy Bear Drive coordinators to replenish the supply of stuffed animals so that every child admitted to the hospital year-round receives a stuffed animal. While the Teddy Bear Drive has various generous business and community group supporters, the bulk of the donations still come from law enforcement. Even though Hardy is retiring at the end of December, he said he feels like the drive is part of him and he will continue to serve on the planning committee and donate. Another intent of the teddy bear collection is to let officers who often witness children in traumatic situations do something positive for children. In several instances, the drive has also touched some officers personally when their own child or family member was sick. In the 8th year of the teddy bear drive, Hardy's own 2-year-old daughter became critically ill from a ruptured appendix. He didn't tell anyone his daughter was a patient, but the word got out and she was given a teddy bear. After she was released, Hardy doubled his efforts to collect more stuffed animals for the hospital. All law enforcement officers and the court's probation department now participate in the drive, collecting new stuffed animals or monetary donations. Rady Children's Hospital also accepts toys and donations to bring smiles to the young patients year-round. For more information, visit teddybeardrive.com.
The National Weather Service is forecasting snow on Wednesday and Thursday down to 3,000 feet, which could include Interstate 8 in East County. Significant levels of snow are forecast above 5,000 feet, bringing a white Thanksgiving to our mountain areas. Holiday travelers should use caution due to slippery roads and strong west winds, as well as potential for ice, snow, and, of course, wild turkeys on those mountain roadways. West of the mountains, rain is forecast with high winds and blowing sand in desert areas. So take care, and from all of us to all of you, have a very happy Thanksgiving Day. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jules,
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.